Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Because you can't force someone to address things they don't want to address. But at the same time, I think for a lot of people, the reality is it's not until they get that ultimatum from someone who is with them all the time and sees it and says, you cannot continue like this because it's also impacting me so severely. But I think what happens for a lot of people is that's when they cut and run.
Welcome to today's podcast episode. This is a conversation with Tyler Mahoney. Tyler is a business owner, a gold prospector of all things, and also an author of a book aptly titled Gold Digger. And I'll let Tyler explain a little bit more about that to you during our conversation. This conversation, though, whilst we do touch on her gold digging and prospecting history, is largely centered around mental health and Tyler's personal journey with learning that she has bipolar disorder and living with bipolar. This is a conversation that I think everyone will be able to find helpful. Even if you personally haven't had mental health struggles, you likely know someone who has, or you know someone who is caring for someone who is going through a challenging time. We do talk about suicide, we talk about depression, we touch on eating disorders. It is a conversation about mental health. So please just keep that in mind, especially if there are little ears around, and also if you yourself are feeling sensitive to these topics and they may be triggering for you. We do speak specifically about Tyler's journey, and I think it's important to stress that. This is obviously not a podcast that is, you know, diagnosing anyone else or providing any medical information or guidance. This is a conversation about Tyler's experience in getting her diagnosis, her medication, how she lives with, how she copes with having bipolar, how it impacts her work, her romantic partnerships, her friendships, everything. So let's get into my chat with Tyler. Just quickly, a word from today's sponsors. Unless, of course, you're one of our Venti members, in that case, there are no ads and your episode is about to keep playing.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
When it comes to bipolar, I feel like there's still a lot of stigma around bipolar. I don't know what it was like for you growing up, but for me, I was kind of that age bracket where the term bipolar was just thrown around in regards to someone acting a little bit wild or perhaps moving violently from one mood to the next. And even just said in like a very throwaway kind of expression, like, oh, I'm having such a bipolar day today. Was it like that for you growing up? Like, did people use that terminology so loosely?
Oh my God, yes. I definitely think when I was younger, it was a lot worse. But still nowadays, like you just said, people use the term in such a throwaway way. They'll be going about their normal day and say, I'm having such a bipolar day today. And it makes me cringe so much because it's such a serious mental health issue. And I just think the education's not quite there yet. So I'm excited to talk about it and hopefully break down some of those stigmas.
When you're having a chat with someone and they ask you to explain what bipolar is, obviously you're not coming at it from a medical perspective. You're coming at it from having lived with bipolar. So how do you describe that experience to someone?
Yeah, definitely. So firstly, the description is having extreme highs and extreme lows in your emotions. It's not just about, you know, you got a bad exam mark, so you're having a bit of a down day, and then, you know, you got engaged, so you're really excited. It's a much more serious issue than that. For me personally, it's having these huge depressive episodes where the depression is so dark and so black that you cannot possibly see any way out of it. When I'm in that depressive moment, I cannot possibly see a life without having depression. And then on the other hand, it's having these manic episodes where it's like these extreme highs, but it's not a happiness kind of high. It's a mood high where you've got no sense of consequences. You've got no sense of yourself, really. And you've just like, people who have manic episodes are actually like, I don't know if, for the people listening, being around someone in a manic episode is like being someone who is not, it's not, they're not themselves. So for me, yeah, like taking really high risks, not thinking about consequences, not sleeping, speaking really fastly. And then when someone who knows you comes to you and says, oh, you know, like you're just really not yourself right now. You just have no idea. You're like, go away. You've got no idea what you're talking about. I'm having the time of my absolute life. Like, how dare you even mention that. Having a depressive episode for me is a lot scarier because it's a suicide ideations, and it's just like you know, resorting back to self-harm and things like that. But for the people around me, I think mania is a lot more scary because you can't control it, and it's just so like, I'm so volatile, it's really scary, I think, for the people around me. Whereas when I'm in a manic episode, I'm having the time of my life. So that's how I try and describe bipolar to people who haven't experienced it.
Which is interesting. So when you're in a manic state, you're actually enjoying it, even though you feel like you're not fully in control.
Yeah, it's so much fun. You're like on this roller coaster where you're like, you don't have to sleep. All these amazing ideas are flowing to you. You're like, it's like being on drugs. It's like being on a high. So it's not until you come down from the high that you think, holy fuck, what have I done? What have I said? Who have I hurt? And then you realize what it was like. But in the moment, yeah, it's not as easy to kind of have that perspective.
For you, when you are in a manic state or even in your depressive state, how long does that last for you?
It's so different for everyone. For me, the depressive states are the longest, and I have them more often than I would have a manic episode. So depressive states can last for me personally like anywhere from a week to like 6 months. And then the manic episodes, probably to have bipolar type one, you need to have a full manic episode for 1 week. I think I've had one of those. And then there's another type of mania called hypermania, which is, it's the same symptoms. It's just a little less intense. So mania, you can't go about your normal day. You're not going to work. You're not acting in society normally. Hypermania, you can still go to work and kind of be a part of society, but you're just like, if you met me, you'd be like, God, something's wrong with that girl. She's not quite right. So I've had more hypermanic episodes than I have manic. But one manic episode, I've had one true manic episode, which lasted a week.
After a manic episode, do you then have the down? Like, does that trigger a downward spiral as well? Or do you, I guess, kind of go back to like middle ground?
For me, it's definitely a big crash afterwards. So for some people, I know that can be the case, but for me, it's definitely a big crash afterwards. And then the crash is even worse because then you've got everyone telling you what you did and you're so upset and guilty, and it's just like this huge roller coaster. And then for me, after historically what's happened with me after a depressive episode, that's when I've kind of come a little bit more steady.
It must just be so exhausting for you, not only emotionally but physically as well, to go from like that high-paced, I don't need sleep, I can do all of the things, I've got all of these great ideas, everything's good, to then dropping to that state of wanting to stay in bed. Like, that must just be so, I guess, like just discombobulating for you as a human to be living with that.
Yeah, definitely. It's like pretty hard to describe. I think that's why the depressive episode is so much worse as well if you have a manic episode beforehand, because your body is just like exhausted. Like when you're in a manic episode, you could have 1 hour sleep a night and be fine. I think when I was in my manic episode, over like 5 days, I probably had 3 hours sleep and ate one crumpet. So like you can just imagine how someone's body would feel after that. And then, yeah, in the depressive episode, it's like sleeping for 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours. And that's like, yeah, it is pretty hard for your body to ride that wave.
I imagine you feel somewhat invincible and it's like, no, mm-hmm. all is good. I don't need sleep. I can live off a crumpet, like you said. And then you get into that depressive state where it's too hard to even take any steps towards helping yourself. Like, was it incredibly hard for you to even find that like mental space to just go, hang on, something isn't quite right here?
Yeah, definitely. It was only because my family support system around me came to me and they were like, something is wrong. This is not right. And for the first probably year, I didn't get help because I wanted help. I got help because my family were like at their limits. So that's not necessarily a good thing. I don't think you can truly help yourself until you want the help, but it was enough to kind of get me through it and get me to a place of like mental stability where I thought, actually, no, I don't want to live like that anymore. It's probably not normal. I do want to help myself. So having a support system around you is like, yeah, I don't know how you do it without that.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Because you can't force someone to address things they don't want to address. But at the same time, I think for a lot of people, the reality is it's not until they get that ultimatum from someone who is with them all the time and sees it and says, you cannot continue like this because it's also impacting me so severely. But I think what happens for a lot of people is that's when they cut and run. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. I can't really face this. I'm going to cut and run. And I can just imagine that vicious cycle of continuing in that behavior. Like it must mm-hmm. be really hard to break that cycle for so many people.
100%. And with the cutting and running, I've been in that mindset where I'm just like, you are forcing me to deal with something that I don't want to deal with. So it is easier for me to distance myself from you than dealing with my own demons. And like for a lot of people with bipolar or any mental health issues, you've got a lot of denial around it. And it's like on paper, my life is so perfect. Like I could not even believe that like I would be depressed. Like I've got my health, I'm financially stable. I've got a great family support system. I live in like, I've got a roof over my head. For me to come to terms with the fact that there was something wrong was really hard to grasp because I just felt like I was just ungrateful or I couldn't deal with life's pressures or I just wasn't able to adult correctly. So like dealing with all those demons, someone forcing you to deal with those demons is like really confronting. And that's what often people just go, that's way too fucking hard.
And that guilt and that judgment and that like holding yourself to this standard of going, I shouldn't feel this way, is such a common experience for, you know, anyone who has gone through a mental mm-hmm. health struggle, whether it is like bipolar, whether it's depression, eating disorders, postpartum depression, because your logical like mind can zoom out and go, hang on. There are people that would kill to be in my situation. But that guilt just makes it worse and it just makes it harder then, I think, to see through all of that shame and judgment.
It took me probably, 4 years to take it seriously and realize something was wrong because of that guilt and just like also like having to go in and talk to a psych and talk about these issues that I didn't think were valid was really intimidating. It was only actually the reason I got picked up and started kind of realizing there might be something wrong is because I had an amazing GP, which is a whole nother part of the issue is that we don't actually have a system that is really built up for to deal with this correctly. And I got really, really, really lucky that I had a good GP and didn't just chuck some pills at me. She actually said to me, I went in for low iron and I was like, I just don't have any energy. I can't get out of bed. She was like, your iron's fine, but how's your mental health? And that was the first time I like my conscious had kind of realized maybe something was wrong. And I just like broke down to her. And instead of her throwing some pills at me and going, you know, you've got depression, here's some antidepressants, she referred me to a psych. And I'm so grateful for that because I don't think I would have ever had like the ability to go do that myself.
Yeah, it makes a massive difference finding a GP that actually does care and can kind of see through it and support you. But then even like mm-hmm. you said, a four-year journey, like I think that that's really common for people. It's two steps forward, mm-hmm. one step back. In regards to your childhood, like now that you have the language to describe or to name bipolar, can you see that it's always been there for you or is it something that kind of popped up as you got older and found yourself in relationships?
I think it definitely popped up a bit later in life for me because I just had a really like for me, I think stress triggered it, and that can be quite common for people with bipolar. It can lay kind of dormant for a very, very long time. And then in adulthood, you can have something that's really stressful or quite traumatic, and it triggers that part of your brain. And yeah, in my early 20s, I just went through like a lot of stress, and I just think that triggered it. It was always kind of there. I look back at some things in my childhood, like when I was younger, I had like really extreme emotions. Like I would feel things really, really deeply, and I would have a really hard time about not unleashing all of it, which like can be a symptom of a lot of things, ADHD as well, or just like being a teenager struggling with emotions. So I definitely think there were some signs, but never enough for it to be like something's wrong with her.
Has it impacted you profoundly in relationships? Like I imagine it just has to.
100%. Oh my God. Yes. For my, from 17 to 24, I was in a really long-term relationship, and we moved in together at like when I was 17. So, he actually had a lot of mental health struggles first, and he had a lot of mental health issues, and he refused to get any help. And we struggled with him for a very, very, very long time. It was actually very traumatic. And I think, when he kind of come out of that, and I was able to, like, for the first, like, 6 years, 5 years of our relationship, it was dedicated to making sure he was okay, making sure that, like, he had a lot of suicidal ideations as well, and just making sure that there was no acting on that, and getting him, forcing him to get help, and, like, waking up every morning and just being walking on eggshells, making sure that if his mood was okay, I could be okay. If his mood was down, how was I reacting to that? So I was never in touch with my own emotions, and how he woke up in the morning would determine the rest of our day. And he would go missing on days for end because he'd be in these depressive episodes, and I would be like, I was in fight or flight always. And then towards the end of our relationship, he kind of got a lot better and kind of took a turn towards me. And that's when we were living in a different state. We had financial issues, and like, I had a high stress job. It all kind of just like came onto me, and then I started having the issues in the relationship, and he just did not know how to deal with that at all. And he just kind of like was like bailing big time, which was really hard. And I don't really blame him, because it is really hard to deal with someone who's going through who's going through a bipolar diagnosis, and you're not really taught in school how to help someone. But not having his love and support, I think, towards the end was a really, like, defining factor on us as separating.
Yeah. I mean, dating is tricky enough, right? And then you throw mental health into the mix, and I know, like, I do really understand how hard it can be living with it, and also having a partner who is struggling. It's really, really tough. When you are dating people, or you're out in the world meeting people, do you feel like you have to disclose that you have bipolar early on?
yeah, I think so. Just because it was, well, I have a boyfriend now, I've been together with for 3 years, and at the start of us dating, it was something that I was still really like kind of dealing with, and I didn't feel like I had a really strong grasp on it. Now I feel like I have a really strong grasp on it. So if I met someone now, I don't think I would tell them early on. I think it would be, if we started to get serious, I would definitely give them a heads up, because it is something that could potentially impact them in the future. But when I started dating Jake, I told him really early on, because I was like, this is what I deal with. It's probably going to impact how we communicate and how we, you know, issues in the future. I don't know if I'm going to have another episode. So I definitely did tell him early on, but only because I knew it was going to get serious with him. If I didn't think it was going to be serious, I probably wouldn't have.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, makes sense. In regards to management, how do you actually have a grip on it now? Like, what are the things that you do? What helps? What do you avoid? All of that stuff.
Definitely. No, definitely. I think like now I know that if I'm in a depressive episode or if I'm feeling like it's kind of creeping in and it's behind me, no drinking. That's a big one. Making sure that this is so like such a boring response, but eating healthy, exercising and getting sleep are so, so crucial. Sleep in bipolar is one, a huge trigger, and then two, also a big symptom. So if I'm oversleeping, if I'm getting like 13 hours of sleep, that is when the depressive episode, like, just symptoms start crawling back in. I can feel myself being sluggish and having bad thoughts. My physical body will often trigger my mental state. So making sure that I'm getting 8 hours of sleep, and then on the other side, undersleeping, I can feel myself getting delusional when I'm undersleeping, and then that starts to like, it has a domino effect. So sleep, exercise, I know that I can keep the demons kind of at bay if I'm exercising. Lots of therapy, like years and years of therapy is a big one, professional help, being medicated. So I was put on lithium 2020. It took a couple of different drugs to or medications to kind of find the one that worked, but lithium was definitely necessary. And then also another thing is, this is quite common with people with bipolar, is you start getting medicated and you start getting really like healthy and you feel like life's great, and then you have a really big urge to come off the medication because you're like, well, life's actually boring now. Life is actually so fucking boring.
And that is so common. People with depression as well, right? Like you take antidepressants and then you go, oh, I'm starting to feel a bit better. I don't need these anymore. Having that like cognitive dissonance and going, oh, you know, maybe it's the antidepressants that are making me feel better. Maybe I should stay on them.
Maybe.
Like being human is tricky.
Oh my God, I know. And then like being also like addicted to the mania, like because all these amazing ideas come in and you feel so creative and so great, and then you get medicated and like it honestly, life can seem incredibly boring. Being stable can be incredibly boring because you're so addicted to chaos and addicted to the highs. But then one thing that I always just remind myself that is with those highs come incredible lows, and it hurts people. It hurts my future. So even though it's like an addiction to like with drugs, you know, the drugs can feel really great in the moment, but I just remind myself of the consequences. And I think because I went through such a really extreme low that I can kind of have the hindsight now to go, nothing is worth going back to that. And then, yeah, so just surrounding yourself with people that love you, making sure that you drop your ego. And that if someone that you love and respect comes to you and says, hey, you've been a bit irritable lately, or you're being quite snappy, instead of being on the defense, just being like, okay, what do I need to kind of address in my life right now? Stress management is a huge one. Stress management in bipolar is a really big one. So kind of just having like this balancing act of making sure that everything in your life is like steady and okay to make sure that I am.
Yeah, which I feel like everyone has to balance those things, but not everyone has these severe consequences if they're out of balance. So I can imagine for you, it's like walking that tightrope of like getting enough sleep, not getting too much sleep, all of the things. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, I think, that you say you kind of miss that rush during mania. Do you feel like medication, even though it's leveled you out and you're feeling more stable, do you feel like it's dulled any of your creativity as well?
I think if you asked me that question 3 years ago, I would have said 100%. I would have been like, yes, like I'm nowhere near as creative. I miss the highs, blah, 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 blah. Now in hindsight that I've had a couple of years of stability, I can see that that is like not the case. I am still creative. I still have amazing ideas. People still love being around me. I'm still confident and extroverted. And all of these things that you tie with a high, you actually can be. That is just a part of your personality. You can have that stable just with all of these consequences don't come with it. So it's really hard when you're just kind of finding that balance to think that that is not the best version of yourself. But I think with years of stability, you kind of get the hindsight to see that there is life is great being stable.
Yes. I think a lot of people that are in the creative industries probably resist seeking that help because of that idea, that sort of, you know, whether it's true, whether it's a bit of a myth or whatever about, oh, it's going to dull my creativity. when it comes to having a diagnosis and being able to name it and go, I have bipolar type 1 or whatever it might be for anyone, really, I think it's the same with any mental health condition. Have you personally felt confusion over like, what is you? Like, what parts are you and what parts are the bipolar? And I ask that question because I have ADHD and I've got twin boys. I have ADHD and an autism diagnosis. And I just have been thinking about that a lot lately, like this interesting experience of going, well, that's how my brain works. So that is me. Mm-hmm. But then if you can treat it with medication or management factors, is that you? Like, I don't know. I don't even know if that question makes sense. No, like, I think I'm still kind of in like, no. Like, oh, what does that mean stage?
100%. But I still feel like I'm in that stage as well. I'm like, that is like so funny. I think about that all the time. And it's when I was really coming out of it, I was like, I don't actually even know who I am. Like, this is who I am clearly because this is the brain I was born with. But this brain doesn't function in our society. So for me to function in this society and have strong relationships and being able to go to work and stuff, I need to be medicated. So then it's like almost like a mourning process, like mourning that version of you. But unfortunately, that version of me is not, I can't live like that. So, and then I think like this medicated version of me and this stable version of me is also me. Like, it clearly is me. There is clearly a lot to love about it as well. But I totally get what you're saying about, and I can imagine having ADHD, it comes with, it's almost like a gift in some ways. It comes with all these amazing abilities. But then in to live in like our society, especially with like capitalism and everything like that, you can't always live like that. You have to be at this level to be in this society. So it's really hard. I can imagine that's a, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow almost.
It is. And I'm still kind of in the place where I hear people talk about it as a superpower. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not quite there.
Yeah.
I'm not quite seeing it as a superpower. I'm kind of seeing it as a burden, but that's a whole other conversation. In regards to, I guess, having a partner that may be struggling with a mental health condition, what is it that you found really helpful? Because I think often people just don't know what to do.
So speaking about it from when I did have a partner who was going through mental health issues, I think firstly this can be like just looking after yourself because you can't look after them if you're not, if your cup is not full. And sometimes it's really hard to not just completely forget every single need that you've ever had just to focus on them. You have to really just focus on yourself. And because a lot of times, like this is not always the case, but when you are living with someone who is struggling with mental health or bipolar, they can cross a lot of boundaries you have in a relationship and about how you want to be treated because of their mental illness. And it's not them, it is a mental illness, but just having strong boundaries and just remembering that you are a human being with needs that needs to be treated in a certain way. And that line is so hard to kind of balance. Like, it's like, who is, it's not them, but I'm also being treated in a really awful way. And knowing when to kind of just give them leeway because it is not them and they are struggling, and to when to be a bit harder and be like, no, I'm not going to take that. That's a line that I always struggled to balance. But then when it comes to supporting them, just love and support, like I said before, is the only thing that got me through. And I couldn't imagine going through it without people who just like stood by my side and did realize that when I was doing things that were insane, it's not me, it is a mental illness. So giving me leeway, giving me empathy. Like a thing with bipolar for me is I get really irritable and really like snappy, and that can be really hard to live with. So just if I am snapping and I am being really irritable, not fighting back with fire and being like, fuck you, rah, 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 coming to me with softness and being like, hey, you are being really irritable. I know this is a symptom of your bipolar. Is there something we can do to, have you been sleeping? Have you been exercising? And then just encouraging professional help and not taking it personally if the other person doesn't want professional help. I used to get so offended. I would be like, why don't you want to get professional help? Why don't you want to get better? Like, why is my love not enough for you to get better? I just couldn't understand why I wasn't enough for him to want to get better, but just not taking it personally. There is nothing you can do until that person truly wants to help themselves. So kind of just loving, just standing by them and loving them and looking after yourself and making sure that, you know, those boundaries are still set in place.
Yeah. And I can imagine for some people, there could even be an element of almost weaponizing that mental health mm-hmm. condition against someone, like, mm-hmm. you know, really saying, oh, you're being this way because of this mental health condition, or you're acting that way. And it's just so hard, isn't it, to try and work out. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we just discussed, mm-hmm. like yourself as an individual, trying to work mm-hmm. out what parts are you and what parts are a mental health condition. And then for someone that loves you from the outside looking in, you know, that's even trickier, I think, sometimes to try and work mm-hmm. out, oh, is that the person I know, or is the person I know really going through something else? Like it is. It's so hard. Oh my God,
finding that balance of giving them leeway and giving them love and going, I know you're not yourself right now, and just being supportive. But also, like, if someone's treating you awfully, it's not an excuse. You know, I have bipolar, and doesn't mean that I'm going to be abusive to my partners and stuff. And people should never weaponize that as an excuse to be treating you really, really badly. It can be an explanation for going out and, I don't know, buying a $40,000 piano because you're in a manic episode and didn't realize that wasn't a good idea. But it's not an excuse to be abusive or emotionally manipulative. So kind of just really making sure that you're being supportive, but loving yourself and having boundaries is a really hard balance.
Yeah, absolutely. I've also seen, Tyler, over on your Instagram, you've spoken about having an eating disorder. For you, do you feel like the food and exercise control was wrapped up in feeling out of control in other areas? Like for you, was that a way to feel like you had some power?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think as well, because that was all happening at the same time. So I was exercising 30 times a week because I was in this hypermanic state where I just was like, had all this energy. I just wanted to like do something with it. But then it was also an excuse to like, yeah, definitely like with my restricted eating, I just wanted to be in control. Just, and then also like if say, for example, I would set myself the most stupid like restrictions for the week. Like this week would be no food that's white, no carbs, no white carbs. And then if I did have like, I was at work and I had a chip, the like mental like guilt I would put myself through, it'd be like weeks of hating on myself and weeks of being in a depressive episode because of one chip. So they were definitely like hand in hand. And as I've kind of gotten better with my mental health, my eating has gotten so much better as well.
Yeah, there's so much crossover there. Like I think sometimes it's hard mm-hmm. to untangle one thing from the other.
Oh like, my God.
I think now about my ADHD, and because I had a really bad eating disorder in my early 20s, and I still, even now at 30, nearly 37, I still ponder like, what is full recovery like when we live in a world that is obsessed with food rules? And I'm like, wait, mm-hmm. is that an eating disorder thing, or is that just a being a female in society thing? Like it's hard.
Oh my God, yes. I can't imagine, like, my boyfriend, I look at him sometimes, I'm like, how are you like, it must be so nice to not have the food noise constantly. It's like I'll put dressing on my salad and those thoughts come back and it's like, was that too much dressing? Is that too much sugar in that dressing? And it's, you're right. It's like, was that my eating disorder? Is that just because I've been on Instagram all day and it's been telling me that there's too much sugar in my dressing?
I think even beyond food stuff, right? Like I'll often look at my partner and I'll say to him, like, it must just be nice to walk through the world as you. Like it must just be nice to walk through the world as a 6'2" man that can go anywhere he wants to go and not face judgment and not be, you know, no one ever says to him, oh, you're being hysterical or you're moody because of your period. Like all of those things that a man can cruise through the world with.
Oh, I've got no idea. I was just in America. Oh my God, that's so funny. I was just in America and I landed at like 11 p.m. at night. Long story short, I was in LA, couldn't get into my Airbnb, was stranded on the side of the road in LA by myself.
Oh my gosh.
And I rang my boyfriend. I was like crying. I was like, I need to book a hotel room. He's like, just relax, babe. Relax. I'm in LA. There's like, I don't know where the fuck I am. I don't know anyone in this city. It's midnight at this point.
I'm alone.
How could you possibly? Yes. He was like, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. No, you would be fine in this situation. I have a real threat of being killed. Okay, there is a big difference, babe.
Yeah, there's so much in regards to the mental load that men don't even consider. And I know that you work in a male-dominated industry, right? Like for our listeners who perhaps don't know what it is that you do, can you tell our listeners what you do beyond educating people like me on bipolar?
So I'm a gold prospector. I'm fourth generation. So I've just done it my whole life. Basically, we find gold, me and my family find gold for a living. And the mining industry is incredibly male dominated. There's definitely a shift now to getting women in the industry. But now women are in the industry, they're facing, you know, sexism and misogyny. I think we've still got a long way to go, but we're definitely on the right path. So I do that. And then I do gold dealing as well. So I sell my family's gold internationally, and I buy off local prospectors, and I go out to Indigenous communities and buy gold off them for above industry standard rates. So there's like the best thing about my career and my world is that there's so many different pathways and avenues, and I'm doing so many things, which I think with my mental health really helps me, because one thing I was always worried about with my mental health is being boring and stagnant, and I just like could not do that. So being in a normal 9-to-5 office job really doesn't suit my mental health. So one thing I have learned is that I need to be doing different things to kind of keep my brain activated.
Yeah, I recently heard a quote about how, and I can't even remember where I heard it, it would have been in a podcast, I'm sure, but it was along the lines of like, a busy brain doesn't have time to go down like the path of certain things that might, you know, call to you otherwise. Like if you're really busy and focused on other things, even if you have that kind of addictive personality, it may lay more dormant in you if you're busy focusing on other things. And that's not to say that's the cure for all mental health conditions or all of that stuff. But I definitely think there is something to be said about being busy and having things to focus on that take you out of, you know, pathologizing whatever's going on for you or that sort of stuff.
100%. I, like you said, I don't think it's the cure for everyone, but I know for me, I cannot be alone at an office desk working by myself all day, because that is when the bad thoughts creep in. I don't know if this will be like this for the rest of my life, but I do not have the ability to be alone in my thoughts and have them be positive thoughts for an extended amount of time. I can't do it. It's just not there. I don't have that ability. So I know that I have to be busy. I have to be out and seeing people. I have to be on phone calls. I have to be not living within my own brain, because that's when it can get really dark. It's just my brain's not a very nice place sometimes, and it's just managing that. Like I went and worked in Alaska on a gold mine in 2022, and one of my jobs was to sit in a rock truck all day. Holy shit, I've never had worse thoughts in my life, because I just was like alone with my own thoughts. And I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just another thing to manage. I know that that triggers me, so I just can't do that.
Just living just such an incredible life, just to casually drop into conversation. Oh, I was just in Alaska in 2022. Like it sounds like you're just doing amazing things. And I know you've also written a book. Oh, so tell our listeners about your book as well.
Yes, so I wrote a book called Gold Digger, which is so funny because the term gold digger obviously has different meanings. And people in high school used to tease me for being a gold prospector, and I used to feel so much shame in it. And it's funny because the one thing that I used to get kind of bullied for and really embarrassed about, and, you know, I can't believe your family, like you go out, you live in out the bush and you find gold. That's so fucking weird. It's actually the one thing that has like skyrocketed my career. And it's one thing that like being different and have something that is different about you is such a blessing. And it's something that I wish I knew at 16, is to kind of like own that and have confidence around it. So calling it Gold Digger, that's part of the reason. But in the book, I talk about my journey with mental health and bipolar. I talk about opening businesses and closing businesses. I talk about my family's prospecting history, crazy stories from the gold rush days, and crazy stories from the underbelly of the gold world that's happening right now. I talk about my time in TV and kind of what that's like being in front of the camera and traveling the world. I dated someone that I worked with on the TV show, which was kind of it's a whole nother podcast, but I talk about that in the book. So yeah, it's like all of these different things all kind of meshed into one place.
Amazing. Congratulations. Writing a book is no easy feat.
When I signed that book deal, I had no idea. I take my hat off to any author. It is a marathon, 2-year marathon, but it's out there now and I'm happy about it, so that's good.
Well, you did it. And I'll make sure we link it in our show notes. Tyler, thank you so much for your time. I'll link the book. I'm going to link your social media as well, because I know you focus a lot on education over there. And you do also have a podcast from a few years ago where you chat a little bit more about your own personal experience. And there are so many interesting conversations over there. I think I've listened to pretty much every single podcast episode you have up. So even though it's a few years old, it's still a wonderful resource, and I will link that in the show notes as well.
Oh, thank you so much. And I really enjoyed that chat. Thanks, Kylie.
Thank you.
Before you run off, I just wanted to mention that over on Sunroom, you're going to find exclusive content that will be seen nowhere but Sunroom. And the reason for this is Sunroom is a safe platform. Things can't be screenshotted, they can't be shared or taken out of context, really. Sunroom is the inner circle, and I am over there sharing workouts, reflections, honest, truly raw thoughts and feelings, instant reactions to certain things that are going on in my life, and so much more. Over there, you can also organize your own custom experience. If you've ever wanted to book a mentoring session with yours truly to perhaps take your idea for your own podcast and start creating. Maybe you have a podcast already, but you really want to learn some of the tricks of the trade when it comes to monetizing, streamlining, pitching to guests, or just creating a stronger podcast in general. I'm the first person to say I am not a business strategist, but I certainly am someone who loves the podcasting space. And with over 400 episodes under my belt, I will happily help you to learn from the mistakes I've made in the past and to cut out some of those tricky lessons and to just benefit from that experience. I love talking about podcasting and personal branding. So if you want to book a session with me, you can do that through Sunroom as well. You can also receive personalized voice notes and advice and so much more over there. Link is in the show notes. So come on over, join the inner circle, and the circle is small. So the messages are getting answered quickly, and I am available to you over through the Sunroom app. Link is in the bio. Today's podcast episode was recorded on the land of the Bundjalung Nation. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respect to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.